Across Australia, it's Nightlife with Tony Delroy. It's Nightlife.
Always feel as though you need a vodka when you hear that one. It is 17 past 7 in Western Australia. If you've ever bought a pirated DVD or downloaded music from a free website, then you've broken copyright laws and you're far from alone. The debate over who owns content and who should pay to see it has become one of the hot issues of the year. From the stoush over the NRL, AFL broadcast rights to the shutdown of the biggest illegal download site on the web. Joining our panel discussion tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about the thorny issues of protecting copyright in a digital age. And my guests are Fiona Phillips, who's the acting CEO of the Australian Copyright Council. Fiona, good evening to you.
Hi, Tony.
And also with us in studio tonight is Still Gerrion, a writer and broadcaster on all things technological. Still, good to see you.
G'day, Tony.
Where to start here? Fiona, when did the war between copyright holders and the internet begin?
Well, I'm not sure that there is a war, Tony. I think there are some really big challenges, but I think there are also some really big opportunities. But if you want a kind of a time reference,
yep.
I think about 20 years ago, I certainly became aware of the internet, and that's when people started looking at how copyright law should change. There were internationally some major treaties that happened in the mid-90s.
Yep.
And our Digital Agenda Act, which was really looking at bringing Australia's copyright law kind of into the digital age, went through Parliament in 2000. So that's the kind of time frame.
How are copyright holders dealing with the bitter reality that people are either downloading for free or buying cheap pirated copies of their movies?
Look, I think copyright owners are responding in a variety of ways. At the Copyright Council, I deal with copyright creators
yep.
all day, every day. And so every day we're contacted by people who found their ebook on an unauthorized website, or it's a really big issue for photographers, for example, because people rip out the identifiers and use their photographs. So people are responding in a range of different ways. Certainly there are some efforts at law reform. There are some efforts at people kind of using technological measures to protect their rights. And then there are some really interesting business models that are also developing, because for small creators, and particularly when you're coming from Australia, so you're far, far away, there's some real opportunities that a large audience provides.
I have to say that when James Cameron released his most recent success, there was a copy available on the streets of Southeast Asia within nanoseconds of the first public showing of the movie. And the approach in Southeast Asia now appears to be, well, don't buy a rubbish copy, buy, you know, one that's actually half decent. Is this part of the new tactic?
I think that's part of the new tactic. I think industry is also looking at, you know, maybe changing its business models, changing its release dates. You know, I think there was a lot of criticism, is a lot of criticism targeted at industry that they were slow to get on board with reality. And I think probably some of that is fair, let's say 10 years ago, but I don't think that's true. So take the music industry, for example. You can pretty much get what you want legally, quickly and cheaply, and not just through one model. So we all know about iTunes, for example, but there's some really interesting other models developing using the cloud. For example, there's you might have heard about Spotify, which exists overseas. We don't have that here, but a couple of other providers, RDO and JB Hi-Fi, now are facilitating subscription-based streaming. So you're not paying for an individual track. You're paying a certain amount a month, and you're able to use how much you want.
So a new business model being developed. Still, you've covered the issue of online piracy extensively for those without a vested interest in the film or the music industry. Do you think it's an issue at all?
Oh, look, this is a huge issue, but perhaps Not necessarily one that's about the law, but I think Fiona's got it right. It's about business models, because the copyright industries, if I can lump all these together, whether it's a film, whether it's music, whether it's computer software, a book, whatever, it's about the artist at one end, the creator. It's about an audience at the other end, and the industry is all the people in the middle. Now, what the internet brings into the equation is the world's biggest copying machine, and the cost of running it is trending towards zero. I mean, 1995 was the year Fiona mentioned for a lot of things happening. That was the year that, at least in Australia, we first got commercial internet service providers. Malcolm Turnbull will remember it quite well. He made a few million out of it.
He did.
And that was where, for at least Australians, the internet stopped being a thing for academics to use, and academics are used to freely sharing their information, or for government and military to use, and, you know, they just shunt their data around. And suddenly ordinary punters got on. So initially it's like, hey, beauty, we can download this song, and this song will take an hour and a half to download, and I'll save myself, I don't know, $7 for a CD single. And each industry in turn has had to face the reality of that, because that distribution mechanism in the middle is going away. Now, music was the first to be hit because their files are the smallest and it was easiest to copy, and they fought back legally and took people to court and eventually developed business models. So now, for example, Apple's iTunes Music Store is the biggest music retailer on the planet.
And some held out. I mean, the Beatles only did a deal with iTunes within the last year.
Exactly, and not everyone has signed on to that yet. But if you look at it from, say, the artist's point of view, let's pick a CD album of music, $20 it might have cost retail. Of that, the artist perhaps got $2. Well, that means $18 out of that, 90% of it goes to the distribution chain in the middle, perhaps $4 or $5 to the shop you bought the CD from and all of that. And what Apple did is said, look, put your stuff up on our shop, we'll just take 30%. Well, gee, 30%, that's only a third of 90%. From an artist's point of view, it started to look attractive. From the record label's point of view, it was the thing from hell.
Absolutely. Fiona, you looked a bit distressed there at one point.
No, I wasn't looking distressed. I think you're going to be disappointed that Still and I are actually agreeing on a lot of things. I wanted to bring the discussion a little bit back to creators, as Still was mentioning, and I think that's the point. Copyright is a form of property.
Mm-hmm.
It gives creators the ability to control how people use their material. So I can license it in a variety of ways, or I can give it away for free if I want to. I can also go out directly to the audience, and that's what the digital world has facilitated, if I have the skills and the time and the ability to do that. Or, you know, maybe I'm going to benefit from some help from someone. You know, I'm an author. I need a good editor. I need someone to help me market. So I think there's roles for both models. But what I want to bring it back to is it's really up to the creator to make that decision about how they do it.
Fiona, the initial reaction from the industry was to say, well, we're not going to spend a lot of money developing new artists because, having all our material pirated. Is it going to damage the music industry long term because the big operators aren't there developing acts?
I think that it certainly has been part of that, because the pool was disappearing and so there was less money to invest in development. And I think that's part of the bigger issues that some of the litigation that's going on at the moment is raising. If you can't recoup your money, who's going to invest in new talent?
But there was also, from the age of the video clip, the MTV generation, you couldn't just record a song anymore. You suddenly had to spend $250,000 on a video clip to go with it. And that changed the nature of the industry. It meant your act had to be making back, you know, a good couple of million dollars to start off with before you'd even got your costs back. So it made, you know, trying to spend that kind of money on a new band risky. And I think there was then in the 90s a flowering of independent music labels who said, well, we don't need that, or we can just get a camcorder and a dog and go down the beach and make a film clip for $50.
Yeah. Still, I suppose there's an opportunity with the internet now for, you know, people who do have talent and who can pull it together to all of a sudden, become international names overnight. We had with one of the Channel 7 talent contests a little bit earlier this year. Jack Vigeon, I think, was a worldwide internet success literally overnight. And so from, you know, very humble beginnings, all of a sudden you're an international name.
Oh, if the feral goldfish of the internet latch onto you, then suddenly they swarm in like piranhas, although they're not as vicious as piranhas, so I use the phrase goldfish there. But yes, suddenly you can be incredibly popular and then the next day not popular at all. But existing acts have done very well out of this. Nine Inch Nails, I have to mention, is the classic example of a band. Now, all right, they had a big following to begin with, but they did things like put a new album on the internet and say, well, pay us what you think it's worth. Download it, pay it what you think it's worth. Their latest
brave one, brave move.
Well, it worked for them.
It certainly did.
Then they packaged it up and said, look, you can download some of the album for free. If you want the whole thing, you'll need to give us $5. But if you actually want CDs with artwork and liner notes and something to put on the shelf to show your membership of the tribe, that costs money. And then up comes the boxed edition for, I don't know, $300, I think US it was. And of course, the diehard fans will pay that.
Yeah. I mean, do we need an iTunes for movies, Fiona, or have that situation progressed too far?
Well, there is an iTunes for movies, Tony, so that's working. But, you know, it is a fact that the movie industry has been slower to get on board than music, and I think that is partly because it's still mentioned, the bandwidth didn't exist for a long time, so they didn't have to think about it.
And we still don't have that pricing model in Australia. People have their caps of 20 gigabytes a month downloads or whatever, and once you put a 5 gigabyte movie into that. Now, that's changing. Those caps are becoming more generous, and there's that national broadband network thing, which will throw a Spaniard in the works, as John Lennon would have said.
Absolutely. Well, Fiona, that's what I was going to raise. As acting chief executive of the Australian Copyright Council, are you really scared about the NBN arriving? Because obviously that's going to give people plenty of opportunities.
No, I'm not scared. I think it's going to be an opportunity to provide better content. And I don't know whether the issues that we are facing now are going to get any more difficult with NBN. The point about copyright is, Tony, it's 300 years old, and with each new technology there's been outcries that, oh, the system's not going to cope. And hello, we're here 300 years later and it's working.
Radio was going to destroy music, apparently.
Radio was going to destroy music. People didn't think that photographers should enjoy copyright protection.
That's right. It's not proper pictures.
The photocopier was going to be the end of the world.
And video killed the radio star. What
Absolutely.
Can I tell you? Still, remind us about the recent advent of the Stop Online Piracy Act, or SOPA.
Yes.
What's that about?
Well, this is one of a number of attempts, particularly in the United States, to get legislation through, essentially to give the copyright industries more power to go after people they say are breaching their copyright. Now, it's part of a whole global movement, and you can see similar sort of pressures in pretty much every technologically aware country, but the US is, of course, at the leading edge. What SOPA would have been about is that it would do things like force an internet service provider to hand over details of someone who had alleged to be infringing copyright based simply on the allegations. So that was part of the controversial thing about it, but it was things like, and it was never properly drafted. I mean, we never saw a final draft. The early drafts were pretty scary. But it was things like, well, they just say, oi, customer on this internet address is copying movies. You must give us their details so we can take them to court. And we had in Australia the whole legal case between iiNet, our second or third largest internet service provider, depending on how you measure it, and the movie and television industry here. Again, it was just over that. iiNet refused to play the game. They got notices that someone was infringing, you know, copyright, hundreds, thousands of these notices, and they said back, well, sure, we'll give you details if a court says we have to, but we're not acting on you just making allegations about people. This is our customers' private information. Go away.
P.S. So, horse has bolted.
Yeah. So SOPA was an American attempt to actually get around that, to actually say, no, the internet service providers do have to tell us after, say, for example, three notifications, they have to hand it over. And in fact, in New Zealand, they've got a three strikes law in already like this. If an internet service provider gets three complaints about a particular customer, they have to cut them off the internet.
But what I think you'll find, and I don't think there's much data from New Zealand yet because the law's only
very new.
But in France, for example, where it's been around for a while, and this is just sharing the information, that it really comes to that situation. You send out X gazillion
cease and desist.
First letters, second, and it usually stops at the second letter. So maybe that's the kind of information campaign. I mean, I don't think it's something, to my knowledge, that the Australian government's considering, but it's that is of course the big stick, but I don't think that's really what anybody wants to do, because at the end of the day you're kind of cannibalizing your own market, you know.
And the criminal justice system is an expensive kind of machine to crank into action over these sorts of things. My understanding that the minister here, Senator Conroy, would very much like the internet industry and the music and movie industries to go away and figure something out rather than him making up something, which I believe he said, because none of you will be happy if I make something up.
Yeah. I mean, can you stop online piracy? Is that possible?
Not if someone wants to do it, no. I mean, it's all just streams of digital bits on the internet, and you can copy them, end of story. Any copy prevention mechanism can be subverted one way or another. It just depends on how much effort you want to put into it. So the kind of thing is, Fiona said earlier, it's really coming up with a business model that makes people not bother with all of that, or the number of people who do bother with all of that is so small that it doesn't matter.
And I think it's also about people's understanding this idea that it's no one is affected. You know, you just think of, you know, rich companies or movie stars, and you don't think of the individual creator and actually people's livelihoods. And I think that's what I see at the coalface. You know, I'm working at people's livelihoods being affected every day by not being able to effectively enforce their rights.
And this was one of the problems with American attempts like SOPA and others. The people who could effectively use a law like that were the big industry end of things, the studios and whatever. But if you were a local musician who just had your new thing ripped off, or a photographer who had some photographs lifted by someone, it would be very difficult for you to do that process, I would think.
But I think that's probably what, based on my understanding of the US legislation, it was targeted at. It's not looking at what you or I or the listeners are doing in the privacy of our own homes. We're small bickies, and as I said, we're the consumer, so copyright owners are generally quite careful about, you know, attacking their own audience.
I've learnt that the hard way.
But we're really talking about people whose business models are based on copyright infringement, like Kim.com in New Zealand, you know, who, you know, that wasn't about free speech. That was just about some bloke making millions and millions of dollars by ripping up off other people's material.
Allegedly.
But, you know, he wasn't doing it for some altruistic purpose. He was making money.
That's the Mega Upload case, which... Yes. Fascinating. Millions of customers.
I've got to say, I mean, the penalties for that look pretty severe. If he goes for the full time, there were five arrests, I think, weren't there?
Four or five? Four or five, yes.
And it looks like pretty stiff penalties if they go ping.
Well, that is really the kind of operation that the copyright industries want to go after, where someone is supposedly providing a mechanism for very large-scale copying on the internet. And in the same way, they want to go at the people who are taking a copy of the movie and suddenly 20,000 copies are on the street in Bangkok being sold for 40 baht each.
Well, I think you probably remember the Hugh Jackman movie that was released... it was probably about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and copies of it actually were available before the first screening of the movie. So
yes, leaked from somewhere within the film production chain, presumably.
Yes. What is the future, Fiona? It's going to become difficult, I would think, to contain this. What's the industry approach going to be?
Look, I think the industry is in a state of transition at the moment. We haven't got a perfect model now, so it's going to continue to evolve and develop new models and meet consumer expectations. But one of the things I want to say about consumer expectations, we can get everything really quickly digitally, but it doesn't mean that the creative process is necessarily any quicker. You know, writing a book is torturous.
Sure. I got to say, it received an angry thing on our Facebook today. It said, how many times do artists, in inverted commas, expect to be paid for one boring song or a two-bit acting role?
I did in an article say that very cruelly to the music industry once. I said, look, once upon a time, a musician did actually have to sing for their supper and perform again and again and again. Once we had recorded music, I said they could do one dreary song once and then sit back and enjoy the royalties for the rest of their life. Is that really what we wanted?
Except you've got a query whether that's actually happening. I think Rod Stewart is in town in Sydney tonight. Now, why is Rod Stewart touring? Maybe he enjoys it, but I think it's also because he's not getting the same amount of royalties that he used to from his sound recordings. And that's okay if you're a performer, but what if you're just a composer? I mean, for example, Mark Holden, who stood in for you over the summer, Tony, he doesn't perform. He writes music, and that's his main source of income, so I understand.
Mm.
So what's he going to do?
And that's an interesting one, because once a recording artist sells their rights to the major labels, they're now starting to do deals with online services like Spotify, like RDO, whatever, and they're bundling them up with the other 8,000 artists on their catalogue for what sounds like a lot of money at the top end, but when you divide it up, it's actually not very much. And I remember something where Lady Gaga's music was played on Spotify some horrendously huge number of times. It was up in the millions, and I think she made about $300 from that. I mean, that doesn't match the kind of money she would expect to get.
I think the Motion Picture Association of America has said that the US economy loses about $58 billion a year to copyright infringement. I guess you could put an argument up to that.
Where are they losing it?
Yeah, look, I don't think there are any kind of known figures in Australia. Interestingly, the music industry did a bit of a survey a couple of years ago, and while most people accept that copyright infringement is theft, I think illegal downloading.
I'll go that it can be, it's illegal and whatever. Theft, see, you're the lawyer, you should be picking up on theft has a very technical meaning.
They said about 2.8 million people illegally downloaded music each year. So that gives you some kind of idea of what we're looking at.
Yeah.
I'm seeing it every day in my work. So, where are we going to?
Okay. That US figure, $58 billion a year
lost. That's what they're saying.
Okay, but I've just done the sums. There are 300 million people in the United States, so that works out to about, if I've got my maths right, about $150 a year per head.
Yeah, but I think they're talking about the world economy.
Which means, it's even less than per head. $58 billion sounds a lot, but when you divide it by the number of people, that's not a major chaos. It's a little bit of friction at the edges, really.
So would we be happy if we got docked that much out of our salary every week?
$150 a year? $3 a week? I mean, I wouldn't be happy, but
you got to find a new model somewhere. We have obviously the case about Optus getting the opportunity to replay material 90 seconds after it actually happens live. And, of course, Telstra's paid out $150 million to have that right. The National Rugby League and the AFL are obviously furious. Where do we go from as far as that's concerned?
Well, this is really interesting because, as I said, it's not, I think, so much about consumers.
Yes.
It's not about me, you, the listeners. Mm. What it's about is Optus taking an exception in the Copyright Act that is meant for private copying in a domestic circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Section 111.
And developing a business model around that to get around. So it's actually about a commercial entity developing a business model, not about private copying per se. And the judge, in his decision...
Her decision...
Was it? Oh, yes.
His? Stephen.
Oh, his?
Stephen Rary.
Oh, sorry.
Justice Jago is a lady.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm. I messed that up. Yep, sorry. His decision. Yep.
Maybe we'll have some women on the appeal, Tony. There are more and more women on the bench. Mm. So the judge basically said that Optus was like a big VCR.
Yep.
And so it wasn't Optus making the copy. It was the person at the end who pressed record on their device. And that's how they fell in the exception. I have some difficulties with that, both legally, to look at actually what happened on a factual basis.
So are you going to join in the appeal?
No, we're not joining in the appeal, but the appeal is happening very quickly. It's on the 14th and 15th of March. And because I am, unlike Still, I'm a law geek as opposed to an IT geek, I'm going to be watching with interest because there's, you know, there's some really interesting issues way beyond sport.
This is huge.
And for copyright generally, issues like what is a communication to the public? Really interesting
stuff. Very big question.
Here's the thing, because when I look at it, the Section 111 says you can make recordings off the telly for private and domestic use and watch back later. You can time shift it, you can format shift it and watch it later. We all do that. We watch something later on the telly.
Yep.
We're allowed to do that. So all that I then add the question, so what happens if instead of owning the recorder you record that on, you're renting it? And then what if you're not renting it and it sits physically under your telly, but it sits physically over at Optus's place? And what if you then don't play it back on your telly, but on your phone? That's the kind of logic that the judge applied, because you say, oh, I'm out, I'll record the footy. But the magic of it is you can start watching it almost straight away. But then if you're on a recorder at home, you can almost watch it straight away with a digital video recorder there. So, sure, if I'd just paid $153 million, as Telstra did, I'd be pretty dark, and I would certainly fight. But it really is going to raise a lot of points, particularly now that when all of this is just information, when we are used to shunting information around over the internet, then are we having these other guys saying we're not allowed to do that anymore?
Well, query whether you can do it now. I mean, I think the Act talks specifically about doing it on your own device.
And that's, this is why it's all going to appeal,
And so that's why in the judge's reasoning, he said it was the person who, you know, pressed the button on their device.
I mean, with the development of things like clouds, you know, what is your device?
Exactly that. Well, and that's the interesting question, I think.
I don't think that the cloud means you can't do it. I just think it means that you get a license to do it. And that's part of the suite of things that you get when you buy something. Say for example, you know, I have a Gmail account. That's in the cloud.
Yeah.
Google doesn't charge me for that because, you know, they're getting other benefits from it.
Like all your personal information.
Absolutely.
And yes.
I suspect High Court, here we come.
Oh, we will. And the judge said this will all take about 2 years to unfold. He said, I think, in the judgment, or at least in presenting the judgment, that, yes, this is definitely going to be one of those that goes all the way.
Well, that's the interesting thing, though. The case was only heard in December. We've already had a judgment, you know, 2 weeks ago. The appeal is going to be heard on the 14th and 15th.
Well, there's so much money hanging off the back
of it. Exactly. And we've already had all of the sporting heavies down in Canberra the very next day almost saying, you've got to save this or somehow kids won't learn football or something. I didn't quite follow some of the reasoning. But it is huge money involved. But what I find very interesting too is the pressure that the sporting organisations are putting on the government for a quick fix. We just need a little change to the Copyright Act. Now, Fiona's got a copy of the Copyright Act on the desk. It's an inch thick. You know,
it's a bit like an adjustment to the Tax Act, which runs for about 14 volumes.
And the Australian Law Reform Commission is about to start a complete review of all these exceptions to the Copyright Act anyway. Not just the personal recording one, but academic fair use and format, the whole thing.
I think Fiona's now got a project for the rest of her life.
Well, it's an interesting time to be in copyright, and I suppose that's why I'm excited about having this role and excited why people are talking about copyright, which is my passion.
Well, I love it. And someone on Twitter has just said to me, actually, I can tell my personal video recorder at home to record shows over the internet already.
It's beyond belief. Fiona Phillips is with us tonight, the acting CEO of the Australian Copyright Council. And also, Still Garion is also with us tonight, writer, broadcaster on all things technological. Some of this may have gone shook right over your head if you are not tech savvy, but for a lot of people, it's become de rigueur. You know, the DVD, the downloaded music, the free websites, those sort of things. Perhaps you have a view on it. Perhaps you have a comment on the issues as they've played out tonight. There's certainly some big changes happening, and with Still and Fiona, there is a degree of agreement on perhaps the way ahead, but it is going to require a lot of work.
Across Australia, this is Tony Delroy's Nightlife.
We're there. We're talking copyright piracy in digital age tonight, and with us in studio, Fiona Phillips, the acting CEO of the Australian Copyright Council, and still is also with us tonight. Let's talk about some issues. Good evening, Paul. You're establishing a small business.
Yeah, g'day, Tony, and guests. Yeah, look, I've been looking online trying to get a clear answer to a bit of a copyright conundrum I've got, and I seem to sort of not quite fall into any of the existing categories, so I'm wondering if your guests might be able to enlighten me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to establish a small business, and one element of the business is reworking existing songs, rewriting the lyrics of existing songs, either for live performance or recordings for individuals or organisations. And it seems to be a bit of a, from what I've found online, it seems to be a bit of a grey area in terms of copyright. I'm just wondering if I could get some guidance from your guests about
where
I stand.
Fiona, do you have some words on that?
Sure, Paul. So copyright, you probably need to get a clearance if you're copying a substantial part of a pre-existing work.
Yeah.
And there are copyright collecting societies that can assist you with that process. So you'll have copyright in your adaptation, but you'll need to get a clearance for the underlying work. And we have, just to give my organisation a little bit of a plug, the Copyright Council has a lot of fantastic information sheets on our website, which you can download for free.
Yep.
So that's just copyright.org.au.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible to do. I mean, is it going to cost him very much to do?
Well, he'll need to get a clearance. And as I said, it will be up to the copyright owner to, you know, come to a commercial negotiation.
So I'd have to try and get clearance from the individual owner for each individual piece of music?
No. You could do it through a copyright collecting society. So I'd recommend you go and speak to APRA. But you can look it all up in our information sheets. They should be able to direct you in the right way.
All right, Paul, good luck with that. Cameron, you were wondering if copyright law protects middlemen rather than really protecting the creativity side of the argument.
Yes. Look, I agree with both your guests, by the way, and I'm looking forward to the internet providing different business models that enable more people to directly market their own works and get a direct return. But I just recall, take the music industry, for example,
yep,
Tony, and I recall over the 70s and 80s, the many stories of even really major bands that really surprised you that were facing, they were almost broke because, you know, young and successful, entered into contracts with producers who disappeared and recording contracts and all the rest. And basically, most of the money of their works goes to the middle people, the recording industry and all those, the sort of the so-called industry.
Absolutely.
And so I really wonder how much of this drive that's trying to tell us how bad piracy is and how it's ruining the lives of creative artists and suppressing the creativity of, you know, our diverse society is bit of a sell, really. I'm a bit sceptical. How much is it really about some of those players protecting their historical loot and not really about the original creative artist?
Loot is a loaded word, but my personal view is that I think the vast majority of this battle, of this action, is about protecting the existing business models, sure. You know, the industries, movie industry, music industry, TV industry, whatever, has been on a pretty comfortable wicket. Lots of money flowing around, lots of people, with expensive car leases to maintain. Sure, they're fighting to protect that. Meanwhile, elsewhere, other people are coming up with the new business models, putting their stuff online. Louis C.K., who's a comedian, American, I think, but he videoed or got a professional crew to video his stand-up performance, put it online, $5 download, 200,000 downloads, $1 million. Thank you very much.
I have to butt in here just to say, you have to think a little bit also about who's investing in these creators. So who's going to give an advance to an author so that they don't have to wait tables, they can sit there and write? Who's going to help them edit their work? Who's going to help them market their work? So there is a role for the what you call the middlemen, and they need to be able to recoup their investment in some way.
Yeah. Not everybody's J.K. Rowling. Thanks, Cameron. Grant, you your teenagers are writing music for online competition, and you're wondering whether they're protected.
Yeah, that's right. It was terrific to hear Fiona talk about how, copyright's really about protecting the creators, and here are these young Australian songwriters, and I'm wondering once they put their stuff online on competitions or on YouTube, etc., if they're protected.
Fiona?
Or if there's acts they should be taken.
Oh, well, there are a few things they should be doing, Grant, but, good on you for producing a young creator. So the first thing I would say is, when you're thinking about uploading music onto any kind of platform, look at the terms and conditions, look at what you're agreeing to. Be careful that you're not signing away things that you might want to later use. And the other very practical thing you can do is become a member of APRA, which is the Copyright Collecting Society that represents musicians in one of the copyright rights, the public performance right. And so therefore, if other people are using your son's work, then they can get remunerated for that. So,
Does it cost money to become a member of APRA?
A nominal amount of money. It's not going to be a huge barrier. I think APRA, for example, Tony, has like 69,000 members. Most of them will be kind of hobbyists, but hoping stage.
I would say, though, Grant, is it? Watch out for the competitions. Read the fine print before sending anything into a competition. A lot of them have been doing things like by entering the competition, you hand over all the rights to what your entry is, whether you win or not.
And that can be an issue where you haven't cleared the rights before you enter the competition. We have an information sheet about that, too.
All right. On the copyright.com, is it?
copyright.org.au.
Okay. Matthew, you wanted to ask about copyright laws regarding YouTube.
Yeah, I was found it interesting when you were talking about the court case going on between the recording of the football as well.
Yep.
And just thinking about that on the digital scene, not only with YouTube, but also all the other player services that are out there.
Yeah, look, with all of them, Matthew, the terms and conditions, when you upload a video, you actually tick a box which says you have the rights to do so. And someone like YouTube or the other player services are then protected under what's called a safe harbour provision of the copyright. Oh, no, I'm getting... Fiona's telling me off. But essentially, my understanding was that if these platforms had a system in place for responding to complaints of copyright infringement, then they themselves were protected.
Fiona doesn't agree.
No, I'm wrong.
Actually, the government is conducting a review at the moment, even before the ALRC review. The safe harbour scheme that's still referred to applies to internet carriage service providers.
Ah, yes.
And at the moment, that definition wouldn't extend to a platform like YouTube. So the government's actually conducting an inquiry at the moment into how it should change that. But I should say that there's some concerns amongst copyright owners about that. If platforms like YouTube are brought into the safe harbour, will you remove incentives for them to go legit and develop licensing models as a site like YouTube has?
Well, that's an interesting thing I found, because in their service agreement, when you read on their website, they say, in a sense, the way I understood it, you are only allowed to watch this, you are not allowed to download this.
It's a subtle distinction, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and particularly with the online TVs starting to arrive in the marketplace, it adds a whole new
issue. I mean, exactly. Look, all of these things are written into these terms and conditions, but very few of them have actually hit a courtroom, I would imagine. So,
yeah. And with all these digital TVs coming out where you can actually record these things, then you have that thing where you can actually record things and replay them in your own home, then how does that go with the service agreement that comes under YouTube and all these other laws?
Well, like I said before, it's really about the copyright owner and what they license you to do. So I suppose maybe in YouTube's case, and I don't know it, they're worried that they don't have all the rights gathered up in order to be able to facilitate that. But if you go to Apple or another commercial provider, they would have gathered up the necessary rights to facilitate that.
Yeah. Matthew, thanks for making that point. It's an interesting one. Lee, you're saying downloading has helped you introduce yourself to all sorts of music and you later buy it.
Certainly there's been a lot of bands, a lot of artists, a lot of movies that I normally wouldn't have invested in. And friends have said, well, have you heard this album or seen this particular movie, etc. And I've downloaded it and watched it, and sometimes I've gone out and bought it, not all the time, but sometimes. But I guess my overall statement is it's quite a conundrum, isn't it, right across the board. I mean, I'm an ex-DJ, and I can remember APRA people turning up and demanding
money.
When we were members of APRA, you know, how would we, were we paying for the pleasure of playing this song? And yet, a lot of the record companies used to give us free records.
Absolutely.
For terms of promotion.
And Lee, it is very confused. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to call it quits there. I apologise for interrupting you, but we are out of time. Fiona Phillips, thanks for... It's a bit of a can of worms, but interesting nonetheless. Acting Chief Executive of the Australian Copyright Council, and still great to catch up, of course.
Cheers, Tony.
Writer and broadcaster in the technology area.